high school, what did you think that you wanted to do with your life?
So maybe a month into my senior year, yeah. I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I went online and I put in applications for the Marine Corps and for the Navy. And the Marine Corps snatched me up.
When we talk about you getting out of the Marine Corps, mm-hmm. did you have an idea of what you wanted to do once you got out?
Honestly, this is how I got my first job out of the Marine Corps. I had a job before I signed my DD-214. And the way I got that job is a friend of mine told his manager that he knew a network engineer who was just as good as him. And lo and behold, like, she called me and she was like, yo, he's saying that you're, you know, just as good as he is and we need somebody on the team. This is exactly how the interview went. She's like, do you want the job? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, it's yours.
What do you think the top things would be that you would tell the newcomers who are, whether they are already in IT or they're trying to pivot, what should they learn?
Yeah, so the first thing I would tell anybody is...
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. And, you know, we ain't did a guest interview in a while, but today we had a lovely Myra Marbley. She's joining us all the way from VA, basically from LA, but she came to kick it with us today, talking about her military journey and how she has got came from networking to cybersecurity. But first things first, if you got in the video and you already like what you see, go ahead, hit the like button, subscribe, and you could become a member or join the Patreon to support the show. Now, how was Blackest Tech?
Blackest Tech was dope. Like I was telling you before, it was my first conference. My favorite part was the pitch competitions. It was so dope. I feel like Black people are some of the most creative, innovative people on this planet. Lots of networking, lots of partying, as you can hear my voice. but overall, a great experience. 10 out of 10 recommend. Tell a friend, tell a friend, to tell a friend.
Perfect. Do you think that you'll be going to Afrotech?
I don't know. I heard Afrotech is Blackest Tech on steroids. And I don't know if I have the social capacity for Afrotech. But we'll see. We'll see. Isn't it like next month or something? Or is it July?
No, I think it's November.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's normally like in November. So I think you got plenty of time if you decide that you want to go or not.
Yeah. What about you? You gonna go?
Only if it's feasible. Cause companies, so back in the boom before Trump got in office, mm-hmm. companies didn't mind paying for diversity, equity, inclusion type of stuff.
Right.
So for example, my only time going was when I worked for JPMC, which it's like the headquarters is probably like 5 minutes that way. Mm-hmm. And I gave them some BS about, hey, I wanna go meet people like me and tell them how good JPMC is. And they probably sent by like 67 million people to Afrotech. Mm-hmm. But since then, companies have had the budgets, but they've had to find a way, how does it tie into your job for you to go? So for me, a lot of times it hasn't been a lot of breakout sessions that I could put down and say sessions and what I'm gonna learn, how will it make me better at my job? Versus, mm-hmm. like I was telling you earlier about, if I say I wanna go to a SplunkConf, I use Splunk. They have different sessions. Because like when I went to SplunkConf, I had to write up and tell them about the stuff I experienced and why I think it'd be good for the team. I think it's really just some compliance BS.
Right,
but
right.
It's hard to do that there because a lot of times, Afrotech back in the day, they wouldn't release the speakers or the breakout sessions until like the week, like a couple weeks before. So, but if I could probably get like media credentials and I could line up like a lot of like interviews and stuff like that, right. probably I had to be worthwhile for me because it's, you know, it's a good time. It's good. I think the one thing you probably enjoyed at Blackest Tech is like you was finally in the majority.
Finally.
So I think that's what like you probably enjoyed the most. And that's definitely what I enjoyed the most when I went, to be honest.
Definitely. With so many, I think that was, that was up there on the list for me too. I'm just being around so many people that look like me, that's doing the same thing as me, if not more, you know, and everyone was just so eager to learn and just be in that space. So I think that was dope as well.
Perfect. So let me go ahead and we'll get right into it.
Okay.
Who is Myra?
Ooh, okay. Myra is a child of God, first and foremost. I am a mother, a friend. The list goes on, but yeah, I'm funny. I'm funny as hell. If someone was asking me, what is something you like know about yourself? I know that I'm funny. Yeah. And I'm kind.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm finna draw it out of you a little bit. So talk about young Myra, like maybe like senior year going into like, what do you plan on wanting to do after you graduate high school? So in high school, what did you think that you want to do with your life?
If I'm being honest, in high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do in life. I feel like my mom just was just stewarding my life to see what it is I wanted to do. Like you said, pulling it out of me. I started off as a pool aide at the pool during summers. And then one summer I was like, let me test out. I became a lifeguard while in high school. I really just didn't know what I wanted to do. And then it was like coming up on the end of my senior year, maybe like 7-8 months before I was getting ready to graduate. So maybe a month into my senior year. Yeah. My mom was like, Myra, the time is coming up where kids are like figuring out what they want to do. It's that time. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went online and I put in applications for the Marine Corps and for the Navy. And yeah, the Marine Corps snatched me up.
Nice. Before we get into the Marine Corps, I want to ask you, because you're from L.A.
Yes.
You know, what neighborhood you did people say, where your grandma stay? Or did they ask you any of that stuff when you was riding around? Like, you know?
Yes and no. But so I grew up on 59th and Crenshaw. We stayed over there till about second grade. And then I moved to Moreno Valley. There was like this big migration. It was like everyone found out about this new city opening up. It was cheap. So yeah, everyone moved to Moreno Valley. And then I want to say like halfway into my freshman year, I moved back to Los Angeles. Okay. And then I ended up going to school in another city, which is Hawthorne. It's like one of the outer cities. And then, yeah, I graduated from there.
Okay. I'm just starting thinking about like a whole bunch of stupid stuff. He's talking like, I know like, what's Montoya name? Yeah, his name is Montoya.
Uh-huh.
He was from Gardena.
Gardena.
There we go. Listen, she know I know this stuff. I'm just messing it up. But yeah, I thought about that. Then I'm stupid enough. I posted on my story the picture of Air Roy and what's Craig daddy name? I forgot what his
name is. Oh, you're talking about from Friday.
I forgot what his daddy name is, but Willie. Uh-huh. And you know, I put on a caption. It was cold that night. And so I thought about like how far is like Rancho Cucamonga away from you?
Don't call me. Look, friends and family, if y'all watching this, y'all know I'm far removed just a little bit. But maybe like an hour. No, from LA, no. LA is gonna be a little bit longer than that. But yeah, you're thinking about the whole Friday you driving out to the boonies and Rancho Cucamonga, but
yeah, because he's like daddy like taste the air. Tastes good, don't it?
Yeah. Something wrong with you.
No, but I mean that's an iconic show.
It is. Movie,
you
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Cause I remember I posted a while back when I was like I think it was like when I got my first tech job in Texas. And I had when Edward said, you know, I never said I'd be the type of nigga that moved away when I got a little money. I got my check and I was gone. I had posted that. That's like funny. I don't know. All right. Before we get into like the other nitty gritty, what's your favorite Friday?
Friday after next.
Really?
Yes. I am a boy, Damon.
Okay. You ain't a paw. You a nigga that steals.
Yes.
Let's see. Give me a quick section. All right. Now, tell us about your time in the Marine Corps. Like, how long did you serve?
I did 13 and a half years. Okay. 2.5 years, yeah. I joined straight out of high school. I mean, like, when I tell you they snatched me up. I graduated on a Thursday, and I left the boot camp that Monday.
Okay.
I was out of there.
And where did you end up getting stationed first?
Yuma, Arizona was my first duty station. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So, I guess we can... So, Yuma, Arizona was my first duty station. But joining the Marine Corps, I got admin. So, I was, like, administrative 0111 for about, like, the first 4 years. And then I ended up lat moving to become a field wireman. So, I did that for some time. And then that was... Yeah, so I was a field wireman. And then I want to say, don't quote me, but I think it was like 2017, maybe. The Marine Corps did this thing called the force modernization. So pretty much the way they put it to us, it was like, look, y'all MOS is changing. Either you want to work on network, which is switches and routers, or you want to be in a Quadcom working on servers. So a lot of people chose networking. I actually didn't choose Gunny that was over me at the time, she like picked it for me. And which at the time I was mad because I wanted to go servers, but I now see like how everything just led me to where I am today. But yeah, so I went network and it was crash course after crash course. We got our Sec Plus in like a week's time. Yeah.
So ironically, I actually worked with like, so my first IT job was working for, at the time, it was CSC. Mm-hmm. Now they are owned by GDIT, but it was a lot of retired Air Force people there. Mm-hmm. And I heard stories about, yeah, we all had the crams and we got the Sec Plus super fast.
Yeah.
And I think that's where that culture of Air Force people and anybody in the military pushing for Sec Plus so fast.
Like, yes.
My mentor at the time in 2013, he found out what my major was. He was like, go get the Security Plus. The funny thing is, though, before that, I never knew anything about certs. Like, I was in school and they weren't telling us about certs.
Yeah.
So I was actually thankful that I got it. But after I got it, I still didn't really have any experience, like, talking about. So I had to start a help desk. But I just say, like, that's one of the things, like, I think, like, the military, of course, they pay for. So that's why most people you're going to meet in the military going to have a Sec Plus. They might got an A Plus. They mm-hmm. might have Network Plus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they be like, hey, yeah, I got it. But and the crazy thing is back then, all you most time needed was the cert and they would give you the job. Mm-hmm. So.
But, you know, ironically, I didn't get Sec Plus until I got stationed in Quantico, like 2018. Before I even got Sec Plus, I guess because I was at like a regular unit, they were pushing for us to get CCNA. So I was going through like CCNA crash courses. Well, first they put us on like it was called security networking courses. It was like some course they put together. But then once you completed that one, then we went for like CCNA. And that's when CCNA was doing the 2-part test. Mm-hmm. So I went through the course. I got all the knowledge from there, but I didn't take my CCNA then. I just took what I knew and took it back to my unit because nobody wants to be taking 2 tests. But yeah, a lot of it was like crash course because it was like they were just trying to get everybody to where they need them to be, you know, and in that military mindset, mind frame, you ain't failing nothing. You better not fail. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So even back then, did you know what you want to do with your networking career or you just decided just to choose it or whatever?
No, I was the one following the crowd. Like, what is it that I need to do in order to be successful in this new MOS that we have? Because, you know, I was going against people who had been field wiremen for, like, their whole career. I was admin first, so I had no type of knowledge in this field at all.
Okay. Yeah, that's like most people. Mm-hmm. And so throughout those 13 years, like, what did you do? Was it, like, fairly simple? Did it kind of, like, stay the same? Did much change? Or what was it like?
It stayed the same for the most part. I think with networking, the way we had things set up in the Marine Corps, it was like plug and play. Like you can configure your dials and your switches, you know, back home, and then you know once you get into the field, you're just you know plugging and playing.
Okay, and then
yeah, so, yeah.
So like how, and I'm just asking a different question because for all the military people, like, was it hard? Was it like a learning curve? Like, how did you feel like doing that job? Like when, when do you feel like, I don't want to say belong, because sometimes you never feel like you belong, right? But when did you feel like you at least not mastered the job, but got good at your job in the military?
If I'm being honest, I would say that it got easier once I applied myself. Once I got out of that mindset of like, I'm being forced to do this. I don't want to do it. I don't know what this is. It was when I really started like taking it serious that it was like, okay, I can learn this and I'm pretty damn good at it, you know? So I guess to answer your question, it's like just when I got out of my own way.
Okay. So in the military, I don't know how rank and stuff, all that kind of work. Like, how did your job and everything else tie into like you getting like promotions or ranking up? Like, how does that work? Because I'm presuming a lot when I say this, but you didn't have to go like to war or anything, right? Your stuff was strictly just like IT networking and stuff, right? So like, yeah, how does that work? How do you rank up when you are just like, you have like a job, but it's in the Marine Corps?
So if I can remember correctly, because it's been a minute, but you have like your PFT that you take, you have your CFT, you have your fitness reports that you, and your fitness report is pretty much think of it like your manager writing you up for the whole year. It about like what you did, how you compare to the other people on your teams, how you compare to people that they've previously graded. And then like promotions and all that comes from like headquarters Marine Corps. I hope I'm explaining all of this right, because I'm so far removed from this stuff, but it's a accumulation of multiple things, if that makes sense.
Okay. And so I know, like I said, we talked earlier, like we're definitely not finna act like you had a job interview, right? But like what, and so around the time frame, I guess, when did you get into the Marine Corps versus like when you get out? What's that year time frame? Like when you started?
I joined in 2008.
Okay, 2008. And then so 13 years, that's what, 2021?
Yep, December 2021.
Got it. Okay, cool. So you 13 years in the Marine Corps. What type of, I guess, like, were you touching, was everything like hardware, software? Like, what were you doing when it came to the networking side of, like, you know, or I just do like this typical, like, if you can remember, typical day in the life of like just stuff like you would probably be doing when you were working, doing networking for the Marines?
Yeah. Well, when I first got into it, to the networking side of things, I was a corporal. But most days, because like I said, a lot of this stuff is plug and play. So when we show up to work, I mean, yeah, we have our PT in the morning, whatever, going to work. Because everything is already set up, we would like, our NCOs would just be messing with us like the remaining of the days. Like they would like simulate a Cat 5 cut, or, you know, take a configuration out of the switch and it'd be like, okay, something's wrong with the switch. You guys need to go figure it out. And you're not going home until you figure it out. So it was a lot of that type of learning and like learning from each other.
Okay. Now, since you said you came in 2008, like how was that? Because that's like the, so I remember, like I said, I was a, when Obama got sworn in, I think I might have been I think I was a junior at the time. Yeah, so like he got sworn in 2009. Yeah, so I was a junior at the time. However, that still was a time when we was rough in this depression, everything else. Like, and how were tensions military wise then working, doing networking? Because I got a client and I was texting him. He was like, man, my bad for not getting back to you. He, I think he served in the military or something, whatever, but he works in San Antonio, but he has like, I think a job on base. He's like, man, we've really been busy with all this Iran stuff or whatever. So like, did you face anything like that?
No. Like I said, when I joined in 2008, I was admin. Okay. I was 0111. I worked in the section called separations. So I was doing like the DD 214s and then the orders that pretty much say, like, hey, you're separated. This is how long you did, X, Y, and Z. This is where you're going. This is where your house is, you know, that type of stuff. But so I didn't cross over to this side until, like, 2012. But even then, I was in a student status. So I was away from, like, an actual unit. I was, like, in a schoolhouse. So I was being treated like a brand-new Marine coming in, going to school all over again, like, to the MOS school.
Okay. So doesn't it take, and like I said, I'm wrong, I'm a civilian here, but mm-hmm. don't take, like, what is it, like 20 years to, like, retire from the military?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, did you? Yeah, so what made you not want to go to 2028?
I was done, okay? I was done, sir, done. I think, you know, once you hit a certain rank, it changes. The politics of it is different, you know, and I guess for me, like, I knew that if I stayed in any longer, I wasn't going to make it. Like, I wasn't going to make it. And then my last duty station was on Quantico. I worked at the Marine Corps Cyber Operations Group. It's called MACOG. Like, one day you have a Marine. And I was a little stern as a staff sergeant, not going to lie. But, you know, one day you got this PFC sitting next to you calling you Staff Sergeant Marbley. Next day they walk in, they hired on with Lido. Someone, what's up, Myra? Making six figures.
So PFC is private first class, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And so you was like, hold on, how y'all getting all this bread? And
no, not so much that, because I knew that no matter what I chose to do, I would need to look at the long run of it, right? Like, I wasn't one to, like, I heard I can make this amount of money. Let me go ahead and do it. Because honestly, it was scary getting out, especially as a staff sergeant. Like, me and my homeboys talk about it all the time. Like, some people that we knew that got out, they got out and became bums. Like, it was like, we was like, this cannot happen to us. Like, we can't be those ones, you know? So, yeah. And so, yeah.
I'm glad you said that. So to the current people that are currently in the military, serving mm-hmm. our country, how important is it for them to have a plan on getting out?
It is very important. I say don't do anything until you have a plan. Yeah. There's so many resources. There are so many resources for military members, especially I think this generation has access to a lot of stuff too, you know? So definitely make sure you have a plan, and not just a plan like, oh, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Like, it needs to be, like, executable plans. Like, what is that acronym for, like, when you're planning something out, it needs to be feasible, like time, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get what I'm saying?
I don't, but I'm just not alone.
It's like when you have a plan, it needs to align with, like, you need to attainable goal. Time that it needs to be a good time frame. Like, you can't say, oh, I want to get Sec Plus and then have it like a 2-year time span. It should take you 2 years to get Sec Plus. You know what I'm saying?
Were you able to do the Skill Bridge program?
I wasn't, but I do know people who did it.
So is it different based on what branch you're in, or does it kind of all work the same on how you want to, if you want to get into Skill Bridge?
If I'm being honest, it all depends on your unit. Your unit has to say, like, yeah, we can afford to lose this person for these couple months while they transition out. And it just depends on the ranks. I know SkillBridge for the unit that I got out from, there had to be, like, another staff and CO inbound in order for another Marine to take off and go do SkillBridge.
Okay. Perfect. Now, when we talk about – oops, I hit the wrong angle. When we talk about you getting out of the Marine Corps,
mm-hmm.
did you have an idea of what you wanted to do once you got out, or did you spray and pray? Like, let's talk about you, because did you go from the Marine Corps to technically you would have been in a private, was it a private job, but a public role inside the company, or was it just a private company, private job?
What do you mean? Like, was I working like a civilian job?
Okay, let me rephrase it, because I probably asked you a crazy, stupid question. It probably don't make sense. Did you get a job at a private company but working like a public contract, or were you just working a private job, like for a private company in general, doing networking?
I still don't understand your question, but I'll give you the answer. So what I did was, the minute I decided that I was like, I wasn't going to reenlist, I was going to be done. That's when I just made sure I had my ducks in my row. I mean, ducks in my row, my ducks in a row. So the way I did my degrees, I did them like, I did all three back to back, my associates, my bachelor's, my master's. When I was getting out, I had just started my associates, which was like computer networks, general studies. And I was going to use my Sec Plus, because that's what everybody like leaned on. I was like job hunting, right? And then I had a few people I knew who had got out from the Marine Corps, and specifically the unit I was at. And like, we really kept in touch. So this is how I got my first job out of the Marine Corps. Like, I had a job before I signed my DD-214. Like, it was like, hey, as soon as your contract with the Marine Corps like terminates, you can, you know, go on board with us. And the way I got that job is a friend of mine told his manager that he knew a network engineer who was just as good as him. And lo and behold, like, she called me and she was like, yo, he's saying that you're, you know, just as good as he is and we need somebody on the team. And I was like, yeah. She was like, well, do you want, this is exactly how the interview went. She's like, do you want the job? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, it's yours. So it kind of like, I don't want to say fell into my lap, but like, I definitely was positioned. And it was one of those things of, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. Because even stepping into that role was a network engineering role with, we're not going to name the company, but the government side was a Department of State. So what we were doing was we were standing up the passport sites for Department of State that when they were like handling their moves and stuff. So like the major ones like Detroit, Atlanta, Philly. But I learned more and I didn't know half of what that job required until I got my hands on it, but I do what I had to do. And I stayed there for about 8-9 months. And then another opportunity presented itself and then I moved on. But yeah, definitely somebody looked out for me.
Yeah, no, it's funny because like you said, it's not what you know, it's who you know. But my guy, Dewan Lightfoot, always says, it's not what you know, but who knows you.
Yes.
Like that's the biggest one. And honestly, that's the reason why I'm so big on, like I was telling you earlier about LinkedIn conferences, branding, because of that. Like I've been able to do certain interviews because I applied to a job, I mentioned somebody that I'm connected to, and like, yo, what's going on? Hey, how you like working at so-and-so? I'm like, man, it's cool. And I'm like, oh, word? Yeah, I just applied for so-and-so role. They was like, word? I'm like, hey, we probably can use you at here. Let me go reach out to him. I work with that team. Mm-hmm. But that's because they know me because of everything I've said over the last 5-6 years on this camera. Now, when I say that, I'm not telling everybody to go get a camera and be a content creator. I'm just saying as far as like whether it comes to writing a blog or you writing a cipher post on LinkedIn or you putting demos out on LinkedIn from stuff you know how to do, do it. Like, please do it. It definitely helps out a lot. And sometimes your interviews will be easier because they already know who you are. And then if somebody who's doing good in the company, like you said, somebody who is just as good as me is looking for a job, it's easier to get hired. Now, I do want to ask you something before we go more into that other job.
Okay.
What is DD-214?
Yeah.
What is that?
That is your... whatever branch you served in the military, that is your military's life work on one piece of paper. Pretty much, it has everything on there. All of the jobs you worked, how long you served, the type of discharge you got. And it's needed for a lot of things once you get out. But that's what that is. Okay. I hope I'm explaining it right. But yeah, DD-214. So, shout out to my DD-214 blanketers out there.
So were you one of the people that was able to, and if this is TMI, you can say TMI. Uh-uh. Were you able to get like your disability and stuff?
TMI. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I was.
No, I'm just saying like.
Everyone should. Everyone should. If you did any time in the military, like you never know. I'm not one to push for people like, you know, going VA line and doing all that stuff. But I feel like everyone deserves something. Yeah. I'm not hating on the next man back.
Yeah, and I'm saying that just because of like, hey, might as well do it while they're getting this good because of how they're trying to change and do all this other crap that I see the veterans talking about online. So I definitely say that. So now I'll ask you more about the new job and what were some of the adjustments maybe that you think you had to make from working for the military to working for a non-military company?
Ooh. The biggest thing would be like the work ethic. Like, I'll give an example. I was working on I hate group projects, by the way.
Wow.
I'd rather do it all myself, get it done, and just, you know, turn it in. But long story short, I was working on a project with a peer of mine, and we were setting up a server. And I'm not a server person at all. However, because I'm in the environment that I'm in, I have nothing but space and opportunity to get this thing going. The other individual is a server person. Well, we came to a crossroad. Like we couldn't get it going. We couldn't get it working. So we just took a break. Cause sometimes, you know, you need to, you know, take your eyes off the screen, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I step away, go back to my desk or whatever, calling over to the individual, see if we can, you know, get back started on this thing. And the next thing I know, my manager's calling me like, hey, he doesn't want to work on that particular, you know, project anymore. Do you think you can like, you know, finish it? So I didn't give her no slack at the time or whatever, but I remember walking back over to his desk because I think I left something. He's over there looking at like auctions and new cars and all kinds of stuff. And I made a comment to him and I said, so you can sit up here and learn all the specs about a brand new boat. You got Facebook, you got all these tabs open, but you mean you can't take the time of day to learn about this server or whatever it is we need to get stood up? And so I would say, if I'm being honest, my biggest challenge has been like my tact, you know, because when speaking to civilians and, you know, if I was in the Marine Corps, that wouldn't have fly. Like, what? You don't want to do it no more? Because it's too hard? What? Yeah, no. But so I would say that was like my biggest transition. Next to actually learning what it is my organization needed, right? Because when I worked at the previous company as a network engineer, it was totally different from what the position of a network engineering for, you know, the follow one.
Yeah.
So that was it.
Yeah, I just thought about when you talking about that wouldn't fly in the military, I thought about Major Payne.
Yes, exactly.
I thought about that. It's one of my favorite movies, by the way.
Do that. I mean, obviously you can't do that to, and I guess there is a tactful way to get that across, but I, at the time, I just didn't know how else to like say it to him.
Yeah.
You know, because in my mind, that's like, it just don't make sense. That's baffling. What? And then not only did he say it, he was able to quit. He was able to say, I don't want to do this. This is outside of my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you don't deal with what I can't. I think, but that's one of the things too, where I talk about a lot about emotional intelligence.
Yes, yes.
Where sometimes you didn't have to exercise a lot of emotional intelligence in certain roles or whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have to deal with people, it's like, okay. It's like, we have kids, so every kid is different.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk to this one this certain way,
right.
This one a certain way, uh-huh. This one a certain way. It's the same approach you got to take when you are, whether you're leading or managing people, right. Because, man, these people are snap, or they just make it seem like you're just so bad, and it's a way just to cover your bases.
Well, thank goodness I wasn't his manager, I was his peer.
Right.
No, but still, there's I totally get what you're saying. There is a proper way to get your point across without coming off that way. But I was just giving you an example. That's just how it was in the beginning. I just for the life of me couldn't understand it. I didn't understand the whole like I have a tummy ache, so I can't come in today. You know,
they or was like BSing you. That's BS. Like telling somebody you got a tummy ache, that's pure BS. That is definitely not a reason to say like, oh, I don't want to come in today.
Yeah,
that's BS.
I mean, I'm just using tummy ache as an example. I know. But like stuff like that, like or like, you know, oh, I don't know, my dog has diarrhea today. Yeah, like, you better put Kojo in the
diaper.
Yes. Yeah. So again, I'm used to that stuff now, and I have adjusted. But in the beginning, that stuff that was like it would just seem so easy, but that was like the hardest program to get with.
Right. So yeah. Let me ask you this real quick. How was it being what they call a double minority? At the workplace, how was that?
That was a double minority.
You are.
Oh, I'm woman black and I'm
a woman.
Ooh, child. How much time we got? No. I'm going to tell you. It has been challenging. It has been, it's been very hard. It's been very hard. In fact, I just attended a Zoom meeting with, what is her name? Her name is Aaliyah. She has like Aaliyah's intelligence. She has like I don't know if it's a podcast or, but anyway, we were talking about like hostility in a workplace and how like black women have to, you know, deal with that and, you know, things of that nature. But so shout out to Aaliyah for hosting that safe space for a lot of us women in this space who like constantly deal with that. But to answer your question, it was really hard. At times, I was the angry black woman, you know, or even to where, like, I find myself doing way more than, or having to do way more than my counterparts just to stay afloat, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. I think it's just an adjustment period that most people have to get used to when it comes to working in corporate. So now.
I think black women are always going to deal with that. There's not going to be no adjustment period. I get what you're saying though, but I think it's always going to exist. However, we don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. No, I was just saying in general, I was asking it from the standpoint of you previously being military and how stuff runs in the military.
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay.
Is different than when you get into corporate, because corporate is just its own different beast.
Right.
So that's why I was asking that. Now, having said all that, you were at that role, and then you went to the next role. Like, so I'm asking you this too.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know that it was time to leave?
When enough became enough. The same manager who hired me on Easily, right? Got this easy conversation with her, the job is yours. It just became really difficult, like working for her, like the micromanaging, the micromanaging was crazy. Like, we're not just talking about like, hey, give me your war report for what you did for the day. It was like every single move we made, because we weren't only.
Was it just you or was it everybody?
It was me and the guy, my friend that helped me on.
Okay. And was it because, were y'all both black?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that was another thing too. Our peers wasn't having to do the type of stuff that, you know, we had to do. But needless to say, it just got to be a lot. And additionally, it was like, I'm having to deal with this from her. I'm traveling like once every month. I'm away from my family because I was married at the time. So it was like, I'm away from my husband and my kids, and I'm still having to deal with this. Like, I'm not going to deal with this. So I started looking. And again, I came up with a plan. Sure enough, I was able to land another role. And I did.
I want to go back into that question, because so many times on the show, I've had people, or we've seen women talk about the black women manager and all this other stuff. But in your scenario, it's not just you. It's a black man as well that's going through these things.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility, granted, I don't know if you ever had a conversation with her, like, hey, what's changed? But is there a possibility that she was under, I guess, like more scrutiny or whatever, microscope, and possibly was just passing it on to you guys, not knowing really know how to deal with it or what. Because that's what it seems like. It seems like whatever was going on with her and her management, they was hitting her. And so she was like, it's one of the things where, okay, was she older than you?
She older than me? Maybe. I would say maybe by a couple years. Maybe by a couple years.
Okay. I only ask that because a lot of times, you know, the black people sometimes believe in that tough love. And it's kind of one of the ways where...
No, this lady wasn't black.
Oh, she wasn't black?
No, uh-uh.
Oh, okay, good.
No.
That's my fault for assuming.
Yeah. You know what happens when you assume?
I make an ass out of you and me.
You and me.
This whole time I was thinking that she was because when you brought in... And that's how dialed in I am to the black women talking so much about black women managers.
No, the role after that, I did end up with a black female manager, but this lady wasn't.
Okay. So do you think this was one, a way to manage y'all out, or two, in so many words, knowing that y'all was already minorities to make sure y'all doing what y'all supposed to do because they probably thinking about cutting y'all off anyway?
No, because when we told them, when we told them we wanted to leave, they tried to offer us something different. Yeah, so it wasn't that. I do think that, like to your point of maybe she was like under a lot of scrutiny. So I do understand that part of it. So there is a possibility that was it as well. But I do think there's a way to communicate that. And when you don't communicate that, and we're constantly telling you, because me and him, we were both very vocal, like, about certain things. And we were cool with the core of the contract. So stuff she was asking us wasn't, and that's when the straw broke the camel's back. I'm sorry, I just got excited because I was like, I just remembered it. But we got in good with the core, and we had asked about certain tasks, and those tasks never came down. That wasn't what was being asked from the customer. So now you just got us doing work just for shits and giggles.
Makes a lot of sense now. Makes a lot of sense. So yeah, you're doing it. Okay. So the job that you left, that's the new current role that you're in now.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, so let's talk about that because, like I said, we're going to talk about this at a very high level.
Uh-oh.
Because you have now entered... Okay, let's backtrack. Let's backtrack. Mm-hmm. What made you decide that you wanted to leave from doing strictly networking to move more so into... I want to get into that cyber sphere.
So when it was time to go for my bachelor's, and I'll tell you what happened. So the way I signed up for my bachelor's degree was through the VA. And so when I went to go for my original degree, I didn't see it in what the VA would cover. And so I saw that computer networks and cybersecurity was available. So I was like, I'll just get my bachelor's in that, you know? And so I went for it. And then, so I was still network engineering while completing my bachelor's. And then during that time, I ended up getting a new manager. Getting a new manager. And I remember he had asked me something. Because he was in town. And I think he had asked me, like, to go to dinner with the team or something like that. And I was like, I can't. I have class in Maryland. Like, I have to drive from Virginia to Maryland tonight. And I remember him asking me about my degree and you know, all of that stuff. And once I finished, and I remember I came back and I told him I was done with my master's, he was like, if you want, I can create this cybersecurity engineering position for you, and you can shape it, make it your own. We could figure out how to tie in, you know, what it is you can bring to this role and what we already have. And we'll go from there. And that's what happened. We found someone to take on my previous role as a network engineer. And then he created this new cybersecurity role for me. And I've been doing that ever since.
fire.
Yeah. Shout out to him because that was, yeah. And it was just so random too. And I wasn't thinking about going to like to actually like work as a cybersecurity engineer. I was just getting my degrees.
Okay, so they made the new role for you in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty much letting you figure out what you want your niche to be.
Correct.
What are you currently gravitating to at the moment?
So just like harping on like what's already in place, like, you know, firewalls, like I was telling you, the AAA servers. But right, so that stuff like already exists. The Tenable ACAS scans, that, you know, all that stuff already exists. Something I want to bring in is the pen testing. So I did, as I told you, I started building my own home lab. And then in that particular role, I also have a laptop straight for pen testing. Like they already put Kali Linux on there. They already put the other software on there. So I kind of want to figure it out at home and then like bring it into there. Can't really go into too much about the technologies and stuff like that, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now I'm gonna connect you with I got my friend Lee. He used to be in the Air Force.
Okay.
And he worked his way to being a pen tester to where I think now he's learning how to pen test drones and stuff.
Hey Lee. So okay, because like, I need your girl needs some help.
Yeah, now he's super helpful. He's always like busy working on something. Like he worked for like I'm going to say LM. So you know what LM stands for.
Yeah.
And then he moved to Colorado and he got a job for another company. And now he's with this other company where he was able to get hired because I forgot how many flags he got on the CTF. Uh-huh. But he got an impressive amount to where
they hired him.
I definitely have to connect y'all because Lee's cool. Lee's been here multiple times.
Yeah.
And he's from Memphis. So he ain't got a lot of patience for like a lot of the nonsense.
My dad is from Memphis. Okay. Well, he passed away, but my dad was from Memphis too. That is so dope. They used to have this thing. I remember they used to send some of the Marines out when I was stationed at Quantico. It's called Hack the Marine Corps. Mm. So they would set up like some of the Marine Corps websites, like Marine on, is it Marine Online? And then there was another one where like all we did like most of our trainings and stuff. But anyway, they would have like people hack it and see like how quick they can get into it and to capture the flag. Events and stuff like that. So they have those type of events in, I think, Vegas. And I'm sure the Marine Corps is not the only institution that does it. But, yeah, that is so dope. Okay.
Yeah. So I know earlier we were talking about, like, certifications you were trying to get.
And
you also were looking into the Coursera joint, Google one. Honestly, from your experience, how helpful have you found that certificate? Because I know there's a lot of, you know, ups and downs about how people feel about this or that. I'm of the opinion that I actually really like it. I like it actually more than a Security Plus because a Security Plus is pretty much all theory and a couple of maybe PBQs, whereas you get a lot of lectures in the Google cybersecurity certificate. However, you also get some practical stuff where you learn how to do stuff. And also a friend of a show, Erin Relford, she was on there talking about data privacy. She's been working at Google for years. Uh-huh. She knows her stuff. So she's also on there. So they also get another plus for that.
Oh, nice. I like it a lot. Like I tell everyone, I'm not a, like I was saying before, like when the conversation of certifications and all that come up, I be quiet because I am all for getting certifications. Now, for me personally, I like the instruction that comes with certifications because, like we were talking about earlier, we're in a use it or lose it field. You're not constantly doing this stuff. You're not constantly doing these practical applications all the time. You're going to lose some of that knowledge. You know, there are times I could still hop on a switch and a router here and there, but I don't remember all the command lines, you know? So, for me, I like that aspect of doing it. But to specifically talk about the Coursera one, what I really, really like about this one, it stands out from all the other ones, is Google has like real-time people like telling you about their journey and explaining these, you know, modules to you and things like that. And like I was telling you, I am going to go for CISSP, in which I've started studying for it, but this Google cybersecurity certification, it harps on the eight modules of, you know, in CISSP. So I thought that was the 8 domains in CSSP. So I thought that was pretty dope too. So I like it. I'm trucking along. I think I'm at the end of module 2 right now. There's like 8 modules. And again, how for everyone watching, how I was able to get this certification for free is the school that I went to as an alumni, they offered us this free course through Coursera. And so that's another way to get your certifications and stuff paid for. A lot of times your schools have these resources and they will cover the fee for that. But yes, to answer your question, I absolutely love this course so far. And again, it just feels really not like homely, but it feels like relatable. Yeah, that's the word.
So funny that you mentioned like schools that pay for stuff. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen a lot of people go to the school that you go to based on what I've seen in your LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
What made you choose your school that you currently go to versus the Capellas, the WGUs, or any of the other schools that you could probably complete like super fast?
So when I first started off at school, well, I'm getting ready to age myself. So when I first started taking college courses, this was like when I was like first joined the Marine Corps. So because we were admin got the bad rep of just sitting behind a desk all day. So you either had to be like good at PT or going to school to, you know, doing something. So I started taking courses when my oldest son, he was maybe a couple months old and he's getting ready to be 16. So I started those courses like a while ago. So I started those with American Military University because I was my first duty station was Yuma, Arizona. So that was the school everybody was going to. It was right there on base. It was easy to access. And then so I stopped going to school, right? Life happens, you get married, have kids, all things, X, Y, Z. When I got to Quantico, when I got to Macaw, it was actually Chris. Chris was like, yo, you need to sign up with UMUG. They're like offering this. They have the degree programs for what we need and all of that. So it was actually Chris that forced me to get back into school. And the crazy thing is I always mess with him about it. Chris, I know you're watching. I love you so much, but I'm going to say it. I passed him up, like, in us going to school. Like, and so, in fact, our picture from, what, the year before last, I want to say, he was finishing his bachelor's. I was finishing my master's. So I always make fun of him for that. But, yeah, that is why I had a friend, and my friend Chris, he was really adamant about this school, and I'm so glad I did it because UMUG was awesome. I mean, like, the professors down to like our peers, it was I won't say school, the coursework was easy, but it was just a blessing knowing that you had help every step of the way. And then what I do, like, I'm not sure about how other schools do it. A lot of the coursework too were the leads up for the testing out of most of the certifications. So like for CEH, if you wanted to be an ethical hacker in undergrad, you could test out in that. They had it for Sec Plus. They had it for Net Plus, and the list goes on. So, yeah. I'm thankful I chose that school.
Yeah, I think that's how some of the other schools are. Where like WGU, if you got all these certs, you can kind of like test out like of a lot of classes or whatever. But like from my experience of dealing with so many different people on these calls.
Uh huh.
Seeing all the certs, seeing the people who can't answer like some basic questions.
Yeah.
The people who choose certain schools, they kind of get mad at the people who've been in the industry for a while for our takes, but my takes are never out of personal bias.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more so of what I experience of dealing with people I consult. And so a lot of the takes people are not aware of, I sometimes have to come back and say, hey, I'm making this off of having hundreds of calls over the last 6 years of what I've seen on resumes, what people mm-hmm. have been able to answer or not answer. Mm-hmm. And I always tell them, I was like, certain schools, like, you typically already had experience because you were doing networking already.
Mm-hmm.
Certain schools are typically better if you already have experience versus not knowing anything. Because even when school makes you study all the stuff for whatever semester, and then it doesn't build off of it next semester, so you forgot everything you had.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a horrible way, I think, to gauge if you know something or how to learn, whereas it should just be in steps per that. And not only that, go into people that go to traditional schools where the first 2 years, you've been taking classes you just took mostly in high school. So now that's why I think a lot of people end up just either failing out or just saying forget it, because it's like, I'm not interested in this because I just took these classes. For me, my first 2 years definitely were not as good as my last 2 years, because, well, really it wasn't even a full last 2 years. I went into college in 2010 and graduated November 2013. So it really wasn't a full 4 years. Mm-hmm. But those first couple of years was a little rocky. One, because I just wasn't interested in the stuff. Like, I don't want to take geology. I don't want to take sociology. I'm not interested in taking these classes. I came here to do this CIS degree. Give me all the classes related to computers. Mm-hmm. So I think whenever they change stuff like that and give people the stuff that they actually interested in, that's going to make for a better experience for people, and also building up that curriculum. Hey, get with a couple of top companies and say, hey, what are y'all entry-level people learning? Mm-hmm. How can we build a curriculum around that? So we used to either get an internship, or you guys hire somebody from our school, they'd be able to compete and be fine at the job.
Yeah.
Because a lot of places, unless you like, they got rotational programs, a lot of places don't hire a lot of entry-level talent because they don't have the resources to really train them the way they want to. Mm-hmm. And so that's why you'll see 3 to 5 years experience for an entry-level role, because they just don't have those programs embedded. And that's why it sucks. That's why a lot of times I'm telling people, like, really research your school, look at the curriculum, look at how many people get internships, because that's what you're going to need to do in order to get into the industry. Mm-hmm. Unless you have a person like me or anybody else that is able to help you or speak on your behalf to help you get an internship or a job.
Right. Yeah, I think UMUC did a really good job at vetting their professors, because especially in grad school, it was like all of the every professor I had was in the field. So, and they were like very passionate about what they do. You could tell they almost like stepped in with the thought process of, you're going to be the next one behind me, and you're not going to be out there looking like ass and have my name saying that I taught you this. Like, so I remember I had one professor, and he's the reason why I remember some of the stuff. I remember I used to have to meet up with him via Zoom on Saturdays because I just wasn't getting the curriculum at all. And he was like, well, then if that's the case, we need to be meeting on Saturdays. How does Saturdays at one sound? And he was a pilot, too. So he was like flying on the side. He was doing like cybersecurity stuff on the side. And he was, you know, a professor. So that was pretty cool, too. But it was like that with all of my professors in grad school. Like, they was not playing with us. It was like, you're not finna be out here saying that I taught you and you don't know none of this. Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, in the area, they have a lot of professors.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend. I think, I want to say about 2020, she did one of those programs out there. It wasn't through school. It was one of them programs, you know, you could pay for, where they say you work for them and they manufacture them. But she was able to get in. She learned how to use EMAS and all this other stuff. And she's been thriving in her career. And so that's how I first knew, like, that was existing, because it was over there first. And then when they started doing it everywhere else, I said, okay, I'm familiar with the game of what's going on, what you're trying to do in your career. Mm-hmm. Now, having said all that, we talked about the certifications and how you feel about certifications. Mm-hmm. We talked about your niche, you know, with the pen testing, or you got red team in or whatever. Honestly, I'm biased, but I definitely should say you should look more into the blue team, but that's just me.
I mean, I'm in a lab environment, so it's a playground. Like, I can... That's my marriage to me all the time.
Like, you'll see, like, if you do your searches, like, you'll see a lot of people looking for, like, either blue team security engineers or SOC or incident response analysts because of all the breaches you read about and everything else. They didn't contain it fast enough, or the people that's there, they don't know what to do. And it's like being on the blue team is like being a virtual, like, I know you're talking about the doctors of the digital, I think you said digital landscape.
No, that the guy, he says, I am a doctor of the digital landscape. Yeah, that's what it was.
So when it comes to blue team, you're like a fireman, a policeman, detective, a paramedic, anything else that's like a first responder, that's what you are on the network.
Right.
So at any given time, you never know what it is. You could be on call. Hey, this is what we just happened. We need you to log on. And that's where that rush comes from. You can see in all different type of stuff. And it's very interesting.
And if I'm honest with you, I don't see myself going into a production network soon. I like I told you before, I'm a little lab rat. I like being able to be in the lab, test it all up, package it up pretty, send it off, and let them have at it.
So have you thought about security researching?
No.
that might be something. If you like to write, and are you, do you have to write about some of the stuff like you finding or what?
Yes, you have to do test reports for.
You should look into security researcher.
Well, that's why eventually I'm going to get out of the actual like hands on of it, because you know my master's is in cybersecurity management and policy, and I really like the writing and policy aspect of it. So we'll see. But for now, you know, I'm doing what I do.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I know we talked a little bit about like the veterans and everything else. And I want to ask this that way, if they get to the end, they can listen to back to some of this stuff. What are some type of benefits or things that veterans should look into if they are trying to start them a tech career? Some of them, they try to dress some of their roles up as like they did some IT stuff, but sometimes I know it wasn't really IT, but then some of them are doing IT stuff. Let's say both. Let's say they were doing an IT job and then they weren't doing an IT job. What type of stuff did they have at their disposal to possibly get access to where at least they can at least get certified? Of course, we know that they can get school paid for, but outside of the school, what could they do?
You're saying like the non-IT jobs and then trying to go to IT jobs? Because this is the crazy thing is this was a big conversation amongst people that were in attendance of Black as Tech, because it wasn't just people in tech. There was people like wanting to get into tech.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the girls I met, she's an entrepreneur in the beauty industry and she's wanting to get into tech. So we were talking about those transferable skills. That's what they call them. And it's like, I want to go keep for a second, but did you see that that skit with Tiffany Haddish where she was like talking to like the strippers in the holes and they were like, I used to count my pimp money. She was like, so you're good with finances, huh? So she was like...
I never seen that one. You know, I don't really. I find her to be funny acting. I don't find her to be that funny.
But anyway, I don't. If I'm being honest with you, I don't know the resources that are out there. But if it was me, I would look and to see. I mean, there's so much information out there, but I would just look and see what skills I have that can transfer into what it is now. Like, even if it's like time management, even if it's like, you know.
A lot of stuff I see a lot of times, you got time management, you have people talking about attention to detail.
Yes.
Conflict resolution. I see like a lot of soft skill stuff that people have in their resume that shouldn't be on there.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Only because you can showcase those things in the interview.
But I would say that, I don't know if TRS is still a thing. It's like transition readiness. I remember when I was getting out of the Marine Corps, it was a like course you had to take.
Okay.
You had to sit and they, you know, take you through like a week long of like your transition process and all of that. But in that course, they went through the transferable skills with us. Like you picked the job you were doing and the job you were looking to do. And they were helping you like position your resume and things like that. Is that what you were asking again?
Yeah,
I don't, I mean, honestly,
I know, people say it takes about, I think it's like either a year and a half to a year that you need to have your plan on when you know you're about to get out.
Yeah.
So I've heard that from the many people I've had that's been in the military, whether it's been the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, mm-hmm. National Guard, whatever it is they're in, they've pretty much said all the same thing. Like, hey, you got to be planning this thing out for real.
Yeah. And no, I get it. Like, time flies, but a year and a half, that's if we make time for the things we want to make time for, you know, like if you really about it, if you really serious about your future and what it is that's going to be next for you, then you're going to do what you need to do.
Yeah. And then, what's that thing? I forgot. It's something. It's called something. But I've seen a lot of military people, they go there and they get able to get training for certs and stuff like that. I cannot think of the name. It'll come to me eventually.
I know what you're talking about.
I can't think of
it. I know what you're talking about. But that just reminded me too. A lot of these companies will train you for what it is they need you to do. You just have to be able to sell yourself. Well,
let's you know? Actually talk about that really quick, because remember I was telling you about the training aspect of it.
Yes.
I think if it's a good company that wants to invest in employees, that they will train you. I think the companies that don't have the time and that's only worried about output don't have time to train mm-hmm. you, especially the higher you go up. You look up sometimes in the mid or entry, but I've told people plenty of times, I've had contracts I picked up where they showed me all the sites maybe beginning of the day. By mm-hmm. the end of the day, I was in the queues.
Mm-hmm.
I was working. So I think that's where it is because I forget what this woman's name was. We had a – I don't even know why she ended up, like, blocking me or whatever. She was, like
– Uh-oh.
She was making, like, a lot of good content on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It was weird. But she was always talking about, like, she had came from the military and the government sector. Like, hey, why don't they train in the private sector? And I don't know if I've responded to it. I don't know. I have to go back and even find when
mm-hmm.
they like blocked me. I don't even know if they still even making videos on TikTok, but it was just like a difference based on what I experienced. And a lot of these people are willing to be trained. They want to be trained. They want to learn the stuff. And I always say that you can't teach that. Like somebody got to want to get better at it.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with people that where I could tell they just showing up for a check.
Mm-hmm.
I want somebody to come in there and they want to get better because, hey, livelihood and they want to have a better life for themselves
mm-hmm.
and all those different things. But a lot of them just aren't getting trained. Or they're also what I know, and anybody's listening to this could probably back me up on this. A lot of companies don't even have a career progression plan for you. That's for kind of you to determine.
Without a doubt.
And that's why people spend 5, 6, 7, 8 years sometimes at the same company. And before they know it, they don't know what to do or they mm-hmm. can't get the jobs they want to do because there was no real career progression. There was no, yeah. hey, you're going to be a security analyst one, security analyst two, principal analyst, director. There was none of that. That showed them that like you have in other companies where, hey, you got to go through these steps to get here.
Right.
And I think that's like a big thing. I don't even know if that's just on, I don't know if that exists on the government side, but the private side, for sure. So when I have calls, and this is more so for people that want to go and be a SOC analyst, and we're doing these questions that I have out for people to answer them, a lot of times they can't. However, what I come in is I show them that they know more than they think they know.
Right.
And then that's like the biggest thing I figured out with like anything with cybersecurity is like sometimes it sounds like French, but it's actually English if it's taught to you in the right way.
Right.
And that, I think, is one of the issues where, like, now where I see the industry is, you know, you got all these people trying to make this money, these companies off of AI, and then you are not training people. So when the boomers leave and the Gen X leave, like, what's going to be left of everything? I really think it's going to be a mess. And all this cybersecurity gap and talent gap stuff, I think, is a facade as well. I said, what was it, Thursday when I was on a webinar that I just think is created to help people go to school and get more certifications to feed that industry. Because if you take a step back, school, companies, certs, everything is just a big circle connected and everybody trying to help each other keep on making money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what it boils down to. But a lot of people don't really know it when you're in it. But when you step back, you're like, oh,
yeah.
I see the play.
And it's that constant cycle of like chasing what's hot. Right now, AI is hot. Everybody chasing it. Everybody getting these AI certifications. And next month, it's going to be something new. And that certification you got last month, it's going to be irrelevant. But like you said, it's constantly feeding
that's
and,
why,
into it. Yeah.
That's why it's more important to focus on like foundations and other things of just how to do stuff because it never changes.
I tell everyone that this, what we do is so broad. You just got to pick a lane. Not so much pick a lane standing because I too fall into the lane of being octopus sometimes because I have multiple things I can do within the role I'm in and the role I was in before because they're still on the same team. But it's much easier when you just find that thing that you like to do that you're good at. And yeah.
Okay. Now, real quick, it don't have to be a top five, but like, what would be like the top things? Like now, granted that you're working in the cyber industry and learning what you can, what do you think like the top three things would be that you would tell the newcomers who are, whether they are already in IT or they're trying to pivot, what should they, in your opinion, learn? Or it's hard to say learn because cyber is so broad, right?
Uh-huh.
Just name what kind of worked for you. Granted, I know like your situation is unique and different. However,
yeah.
Let's say you weren't in your situation, what would you focus on? I know you just left the conference, so I know there's a lot of good info there. So like, what would you try to focus on if you weren't you, if that make any sense?
Yeah, so the first thing I would tell anybody is, and I don't know what everyone's spiritual religious beliefs are, but one thing, you got to be locked in with your creator. Like, you need to be locked in with God. Therefore, you will know, like, your discernment, what your path is. Like, you know, a lot of us are out here just doing what's hot, what's next, you know? And when you have that discernment and guidance and all those things, you won't be so lost, if that makes sense, you know?
I get you.
Secondly, I would say I would definitely network more. I already had the eagerness of like wanting to learn because it's just so much. But I would definitely say networking because like we said, it's not about, what'd you say? It's not about, what did your friend say?
It's not about who you know, but who knows you.
Yeah, definitely that. I wasn't big on networking. Like I said, this is my first conference ever. This is my first time doing this. I've always, you know, like I told you, just introverted when it came to my work. But yeah, because you never know who someone's sitting next to these, you know, or anyway, and what else? I don't know. The words of Nipsey also stay dangerous. Oh, yes, you gotta, you everyone.
Let me add it's knowledge of a black though, think if it's able, if it's feasible for them to go to school, should they go?
Without a doubt. Without a lot of the coursework that I in, I'd say mainly in undergrad, grad school was a little different because it's focused on a particular thing, whereas undergrad, it was more so all over the place. We were like technical hacking. Security, there was a CNA course where it was like it was a little bit of everything, you know. But definitely, I like school. School definitely solidified the foundation for me. Yeah,
that's good. Let me see your name. What got school cover certification? No, you're trying to use this. Google cyber certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I know I mentioned Blue Team to you. I told you to look at the DO insider threat stuff. Mm-hmm. Super interesting. And that, now that's interesting because people are doing stuff on a company computer that they don't know people see.
Yeah.
And they are trying to do different, that exploited. Now, mm-hmm. That is a role that a lot of people don't talk about, pays a lot because people want to protect company trade secrets and potential breaches,
mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest way to do it. Outside of, you could eventually be a person that has to show up to court and talk to judges and everything else and test out based on your skill set. So all the jazz. Now, if the listeners or the watchers mm-hmm. wanted to keep up with you, how do they do that?
Let's see. I'm on TikTok a little bit. My name on TikTok is Lifting Frosted Firewalls. I know it's corny. My kids and ChatGPT tell me to come up with that. But little backstory. I love to lift. That's my thing. I like to lift heavy. Love working out. The frosted part came from my baking background. I love to bake. And then the firewalls. Obviously, I work on firewalls. So. We just put it all together. LinkedIn, Myra Marbley. I am on Facebook as well, Myra Marbley. I'm also on Instagram as Queen Nandi. That's Queen Nandi with so QUEENANDIII. Yeah, I think I named them all. That was it. Okay.
Perfect, perfect. Well, I'm pretty sure that everybody enjoyed this episode, and we probably have to reach back out in about a year or two, do a part two or something to kind of just see how on your journey and everything else. But guys, if you appreciate this episode, you know, like I always say, subscribe, share it out, and like I always say, let's stay textual, and we have